The next case is 97-2341, Marjorie Stubnack versus Richard Klein.
How could you be hurt there? Under the new statute, you can. I need to send a new jury to hear the case. What can you send me? What should you do? That's right. I can do that, but it's just so you don't. So it's just like you're going to block the damage or something like that. It's your liability. You just testify in the litigation and you should. They put in the whole new case.
Yeah.
It's a new statute.
May it please the court, I'm currently in a deploying on behalf of Richard Klein, the victim of the state of robbery. Before I begin, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my amount of 15 minutes to watch.
Your time there, Klein.
This is a case of all the beneficiaries of the state agreed to force of action. Their case is the Maria Exchange Company continued operations under the management of Mike Maria after the death of the founder of the company. 8 years later, this is present. The appellee changed her mind and now refuses to take responsibility for her earlier decision.
Would you, is it, I'm having a hard time with the case from the get-go with it being a declaratory judgment when it sounds like it's a negligence case, but would you say that, you just said that everybody agreed that Klein should run it for 8 years, your client?
That the founder's son should run it, Mr. Klein
was just to be regular, he had okay. I was going to say, because they're shareholders, and we know how shareholders operate. We have a whole chapter of the code that speaks to how shareholders interact and run a business. So your point is Klein didn't run it. The son managed the day-to-day, and Klein's role was executor of the estate for 8 years, just executor of the estate. Was this estate ever closed?
No, it's still open for a long time.
Okay.
If we decide that 2113.30 does apply, then the case has to go back for a factual determination, doesn't it? There's all these different opinions about how much client operated it, how much advice he gave to the person who was actually operating it. That's a factual issue that we shouldn't determine here. Now, this is our issue here. Whether 2113.30 applies to a corporation.
This court decides that 21133 applies to this case. At that point in time, it's uncontested that the executor does not move the probate court to authority for 30 days in front of the continuing operation. So at that point, he would be responsible for the loss.
Well, but don't you have the whole question of waivers? I mean, people affected by the operation, the continuing operation business, were arguably involved in it. They knew what was going on. There were no meetings, apparently. But I mean, there are a lot of facts here that seems to me that we shouldn't attempt to determine. But you're correct. Certainly, it seems to me that the statute says what has to happen. But then there's this waiver issue. So that's.
Whether a corporation fits the definition of the deceased business to be a party, it is or is not. Okay, well, just an issue, Your Honor. There is a threat that runs through the entire corporation law. The corporation is separate and distinct from the shareholders of that corporation. The corporation's assets are not the assets of the shareholders. The corporation's goodwill is not the goodwill of the shareholders. The corporation's debt is not the debt of the shareholders. Then how can anybody lead to the conclusion that the corporation's business becomes the business of the shareholders?
Take the case in, and then I look at it, and it becomes very factual, and I'm not sure that it should be here because there has to be a hearing at some point. But I guess I would ask you directly. I mean, we automatically, when we had an entity, whether it be a partnership, whether it be a corporation, or whether it be a sole proprietorship, always went and asked the probate court if we wanted to continue to operate. I mean, it was just routine. Haven't you represented? You obviously are very versed in probate matters. Haven't you asked permission of the court to continue to operate corporations in the past in a state?
Never once.
Never once. Have you ever not? Have you ever not done it?
I've not done it, and I've had the impression that it wasn't required. The probate judge was required. It might not even rule on the motion if he did it with respect to corporations.
Well, the point of the statute is, it seems to me, the statute that we're debating here today is only to protect the executor from personal liability. This sets forth, depending on whether we say business or corporation, in any event, it's only to protect from personal liability of that any executor who runs a business. It has a limited purpose, that statute. It doesn't say thou shalt go and get permission. It says one who runs a business can do it without personal liability for 1 month, and then thereafter with court permission.
But the point of this case, Your Honor, is that the person who is running the business is not the executor. Yet the statute requires the executor to seek the permission, or he becomes liable if somebody else is operating the business.
Well, your client, Mr. Klein, appears to have had a role here. You say he's continued to function as an executor for more than 8 years.
That's correct.
So he was doing something with this business, I take it. Why didn't he just close the estate and get out?
Well, there were problems with the estate, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Not very open. First of all, the estate was totally erected. The assets consisted of $2,500 in cash, half interest in residence, and 250 shares of stock. There were a number of debts and priority claims
I hate to ask this question, but was it also Mr. Klein who structured this will and the buy sell that conflicted?
Isn't your theory that, or your argument, I guess, that the statute is directed at an entity that virtually no longer exists when it's a partnership or a sole proprietorship, not a corporation, that the estate then stands in the shoes of the what used to be an entity. And with respect to corporations, a corporation doesn't die when the shareholder dies. Corporation continues on. Shareholder shares go to other persons, and as an entity, a legal entity, the corporation continues to live. And so it has protection, theoretically, has protection that a business that was a sole proprietorship does not have. Is that simply your argument?
That is part of the argument, Your Honor, because this statute applies in the face of your life for 1701-04 E, which indicates that the Ohio Corporation's life is perpetual unless the articles of incorporation say otherwise. What we're saying is there's nothing in either the jurisdictional probate court or the probate law that indicates the probate court has the authority to determine a corporation business should be discontinued. And we're trying to point out in this statute that because the corporation has not received notice and the people interested in a corporation business have not received notice, this statute would be applied to a corporation as the unconstitutional. Now, this court is involved in the presumption that all Ohio statutes are constitutional. And this statute can be constitutional, but it doesn't apply to corporations. That's the purpose of our argument. There's nothing in the statute that requires any of the corporation or people entering that corporation to be heard. It's left up to a probate judge to make the determination.
Was the fiduciary serving with or without bond?
He served with bond.
Okay.
I would point out also to the court that this case presents a classic example of why 211-330. The number tends to apply to corporations and ought not to apply to corporations. At all times during the course of this estate, this estate only has been a minority interest and closely held corporation. That's all she ever had. As a minority shareholder, Mrs. Subnick did not have the right to compel the corporation to pay dividends. Mrs. Subnick did not control the course and scope of corporate operations. Mrs. Subnick could not force this corporation to liquidate. She didn't have the two-thirds vote. Mrs. Subnick could not require that her shares be redeemed. That's the call of order case. And the thing that this court is going to have to ask itself is why, and the thing that Mrs. Subnick's counsel is going to have to explain is why Mrs. Subnick limited rights become expanded or enhanced simply because her minority interest came to reside for the time of the estate.
If the statute doesn't apply to corporations, how does the fiduciary control the estate? I mean, we always place such responsibility in not only the fiduciary, but the counsel to the fiduciary, but the fiduciary has the ultimate responsibility to administer the estate, including operating businesses or liquidating them in order to assemble the assets. How does a fiduciary control it if you have a corporation over here operating on its own as part of the assets of the estate and somebody over here, you know, I can see a place where you'd have three or four corporations. I remember a client who went around forming corporations just because they enjoyed having separate entities. Now what happens? A fiduciary has no control over any of those assets when in fact they may be the corpus of the estate?
He has indirect control and that he is a shareholder. Just as a shareholder, as a shareholder, has no right to run corporate business. Corporate business is run by the officers or elected by directors. As a shareholder, as such, he has no right to take control of that business.
The assets, the shares, the stock.
Shares, the stock, that's right. Not the business.
Not the business.
Whether what was the estate asset, the shares, the stock, or corporate business.
But doesn't the statute, it's limited to, as you know, to a month plus extension time by the probate judge, doesn't the statute suggest that even with a corporation, when the sole shareholder dies, there's a period of uncertainty. There's a period of, you know, the transfer of the stock isn't made yet, and there's all this question about who's in control. And it would seem to me the statute would be designed to apply to a corporation in that sense, that while it is a separate entity, it there's some interest certainly in the estate, I guess, or in the law, in preserving the stability of the corporation until the shares are distributed, and so the shareholders can decide how they're going to continue to operate edited, isn't that?
I don't really think so, Your Honor, because I think in the lack of the common law, which predates 2113 voting, the rule of common law is quite simple. After the supplementary authority, the son of all the shareholders, the executive was immediately required to liquidate the business. He had no lead time at all. He had no time to do anything else. He must start liquidating. That default, according to the old Ohio Supreme Court case, that means was paid. At that time, there were closely held corporations in the type of existence in the case. This case, this statute, 2113, simply modified the common law and gave a 30-day period of time to do the things you're suggesting. But I'm trying to say that the statute was never intended to apply to corporations, and this 30-day period was never intended to apply to the corporations.
There's some pretty strict timelines, at least there used to be, on when you had to file, not only after you marshal the assets, but you had to file your declaration of the tax return, both state and federal. There's a year period, so you can choose the best date for the stock in a corporation when you want to choose it for federal tax purposes. We agree with that. How would you, under these circumstances, if you're a fiduciary, ever pick a date certain? Because today the corporation could be worth X, and if you didn't have any control over how it operated, 3 months from now, it could be worth Y.
Perfect, Your Honor. That's what happens in the case of every publicly traded corporation where you own publicly traded shares. This alternative valuation date is set by the Internal Revenue Code.
Yeah.
And you're going to value that stock as the beta test for 6 months later as the alternative valuation.
Yeah.
Once the stock is disposed in the interim, and then it's a disposition value. And there can be some dramatic changes in value between those dates. And if they go down, they do have the right to use the alternative value for both federal and Ohio purposes. And that can happen. That's the vision of the statute, that there these fluctuations in market value will occur. And you're given the option to take the loan.
Yeah, but you're going to the next step. You're talking now about publicly traded corporations as opposed to a closed corporation.
The rule applies to closed corporations, too.
But it can't if the operation of the business is under the control of the fiduciary and or the closely held corporate stockholders.
I would suggest, Your Honor, that the valuation of business can fluctuate regardless of who is controlled running the operation of the business.
I mean, do you concede that this is not like shares in General Motors?
It is not this way.
Okay. So that puts it in a different classification vis-a-vis the fiduciary, doesn't it?
Not in my judgment.
Okay.
Doesn't the shareholder
right? Down the stairs.
They are the shareholder, Your Honor, but you have to recall that the executor had very little title. The beneficial owners of this stock were the beneficiaries, and those were the children of Ralph Maria and Mrs. Sutton. And of that group, the Maria family had the 66%+ control. They wanted this business to continue. It's not equivalent. They wanted this business to continue. Again, using the concept that runs through the entire corporation law that the majority controls, they should have the right to require this business to continue. And as a matter of fact, this is something that is our jury, that she was represented by her own counsel and agreed that the business was also continue. And all the executor did is meet with these people, ask them what you want to do, which is what I would suggest extremely reasonable. If I were to figure out that's exactly what I would do, and they all agree, let the business go on. Now, this is something 8 years later, in fact, I said, wait a minute, are you lost? Making losses there, now I'm changing my mind. Now I want you to hold your responsibility, or shareholder, or other business subjects, to claim to make a concern.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Mr.
Lynch. Who was beneficiary under the will of Ralph Maria, when he died, he owned 100% of the Maria Excavating Company. 100% of those shares were taken under the control of the executive. No other individual had any authority over the corporation through the entire term of the administration of the state.
Now, how can that be?
Well,
shareholders, there's all kinds of methods for shareholders to move. If there is a majority, a holder of a majority of the shares can take action, right?
Absolutely correct, Your Honor.
And she was a minority holder.
She was not a minority holder.
Oh, okay. She was the majority?
She had no shares.
250 shares are owned exclusively by the operator of the guy. 250 shares were received by the executor exclusively and were held by the executor exclusively throughout the administration of the state in 1995.
Never distributed.
Never distributed. No shareholders meetings ever had.
Now, but
no director meetings ever had.
And your first complaint about this was in 8 years later, the filing of a declaratory judgment?
That would be the appellee's first formal complaint. There's a long history of meetings and letters in which former counsel for the appellee was constantly demanding the distribution be made and that the document is available to the
That demand, if it were a serious demand, ought perhaps to have gone to a court.
Only that was the case, Your Honor. But it was not the case. In fact, the demand was made in the midst of negotiations. Mm-hmm. Certainly, though, there was in that context, there was no suggestion that because formal demand was not made to the court, that somehow the executor had a liability for his administration of the state. Appellant argued strongly that there was some kind of waiver or consent agreement by the appellee. But in fact, under the operation of 21-13-30, there should be no question or no relevance of consent. Since 21-13-30 does not possibly enter into question of consent, but rather simply states that the executor will be held responsible for losses if he continues the business. The candidate does not say operate the business or run the business. He didn't have to go out and work the digging machine. He merely had to continue. But the business, and that continuation of the business could only occur through the authority of the executor as the sole shareholder. And the record. Well, there was no actual disagreement with the original value of the shares. There was an appraisal done, and the value came in just under $500,000. Through the administration of the estate, that value became diminished. The company was not doing well.
You agree that they have exactly
there's no question, Your Honor. That there are priorities in the estate.
And if your client didn't want what was being offered, what would be the option?
Well, for options were. And there was a settlement discussion, and there's a lot of confusion in the record.
I understand, but if you didn't like
what the doctor was to take the chair of the stock upon distribution from the United States, which never happened.
So you have the right to distribute
the stock? Well, actually, no, because the corporation was the one that had the obligation under the buy-sell agreement to repurchase the shares, if at all. And she could have projected it off. Those are between markets and potentially a shareholder and the corporation, the estate, wouldn't be directly involved in those negotiations. But she could not even enter into those negotiations seriously, or certainly settle, until she became a shareholder. And until she became a shareholder, the executor himself was responsible for the continuation. She could have gone to probate court and demand distribution, and she did not.
I'd like to hear your story. What was the reason for the estate being open?
Your Honor, I found no serious reason in the record why the estate could should have been open to respond. The executor had made representations that the assets of the estate were sufficient to suggest that it be determined, but all of those issues were clear, certainly within the first year after death. And ultimately, the probate court made a determination about how the care should be divided. That would have been made years earlier.
Is there some allegation or implication that there is a complete opposite with the church helping them by the lawyer and the executor?
Well, there is no question, Your Honor, that the attorney was also executor, but the state ultimately received more in fees than the mighty client beneficiary of the state. And there is no question that the oldest son of the deceased, who was operating the company and receiving a salary of $60,000 a year throughout the period while the company was down the drain, certainly received extraordinary benefits from the corporation and therefore from the estate that other beneficiaries did not receive. The motivation behind the executive delay, one can only guess.
Now, if this were real estate, there's a difference. By operation of law, the testator agrees with the last breath, the title is
transfer to be cleaned up as a court. Yes, in theory, that's true, Your Honor. And in this case, we're asking for them with real estate. Right. Yeah, we're not with real estate.
For the case of a corporation that can hold it in the estate forever?
Well, one would hope not forever. Fiduciary is obligated to make distribution as the appropriate time, and we certainly would have hoped that that was long before what finally took place in 1995, excuse me, in 1987. Nonetheless, the executor did hold the share, and the record shows clearly that the executor held the share despite the fact that he was not involved in the continuation of the business. He was the one who dealt directly with Michael Maria, who was the one operating the earth moving equipment on a day-to-day basis. He was the one that also salary as the executor. The executor is the one that chose to have no shareholders, no board of directors. The executor is the one that signed a form for the state of Ohio representing the president or acting president of the corporation.
What are the sources
of the executor? Your Honor, it runs to tens of thousands of dollars. I don't have the figures directly in front of me. It's shown on the probate court. The county members served up to say about 30,000. I'll see if I can see much more of the value of the corporation on the time of the jurisdiction.
Before your time is up, I'd like to hear your strongest argument on the legal issue. Why does 21-1330 apply to corporations?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. 21-1330 indeed should apply to corporations. 21-1330 is a statute designed to protect executors from the common law rule of strict liability for the operation of a business and offers instead a safe harbor for those executives. The effect of the statute is not to prevent the operation of businesses that is with the appellate against, but rather simply allow the executors a place to seek the shelter of the probate court protection when it's necessary to continue the operation of the business. In the estate of Shaw, which is the only case in Ohio which addressed this issue, the executor operated a business, and the statute was interpreted to include incorporated businesses. The court in that case, although it was dicta, did book the voters treated on trust, which was cited. The power to authorize continuance applies to sole proprietorship and case of the partnership. It also applies to the continuance of a business to complete or majority control of a corporation. By including all businesses under the statute, that is, incorporated and unincorporated businesses, the long-standing common law rule is thus no longer a threat to executors who choose to speak in safety. Appellant would argue that they should not be included under the safe harbor of the statute, which means, in effect, that all the small businesses that are in corporate form will now be subject to a very strict liability rule under the common law. Such is the case in both in Indiana and in North Carolina, where cases have been decided where incorporated businesses were in fact held to a strict liability standard because the executive chose to operate with no standing that strict liability under the common law.
Is it your contention that if you're correct that this statute would immunize your Mr. Klein?
Yes.
Would not immunize him for corporate.
He fails to
seek the safe harbor, and therefore, what? You can bring a claim against him is all I see.
Yes,
and what's the claim? Where's the claim been brought?
Well, the claim under the Clerical Judgment Act, and I should point out, there are also exceptions to the account and a motion to remove the executor that were filed and served simultaneously, were all designed to determine what, in fact, is the effect of this executor's malfeasance, that it is his
right
choice to continue to operate the business and what the law.
Okay, you're not arguing that there is liability for for running a business without court approval. That is, because I thought your count one says he's violated 21-1330.
Well, Your Honor, he has failed
to seek the safe harbor.
To seek the safe harbor.
And therefore he's open to personal liability. That's it. There is no personal liability that's grounded on 21, other than the.
Okay. If the business would continue to profit, we wouldn't be standing here and certainly there'd be no liability. The further question, of course, which is whether or not there were losses that were incurred in the estate. That's a question which is not seriously tested.
But it's odd that that seems like it should have been a defense, but you've raised it as a claim.
Well, Your Honor, it is certainly true that most executors would be fleeing to the protection of the statute as a defense rather than ignoring it as a peril.
Counselor, the trial court in part said, although this appears to be a question of first impression, this court finds it would be contrary to public policy to rule that 21-13-30 would apply to corporations which the decedent held a controlling interest. What's the trial court talking about?
I guess I'm insulting myself, Your Honor. Presumably, the trial court is talking about the existence of corporations and the separation of corporations and their shareholders. Although the trial court cited that and didn't explain it, the appellate court dealt with that issue when it said clearly that there really is no danger that where the constitutional rights otherwise would be violated, that the corporation's existence was threatened by the operation of 21-13-30.
So you have no idea what the trial court meant, the 21-13-30 applied in this situation would be against public policy, because I was searching for the public policy.
I also could not find it, Your Honor, but the appellate court was very clear when it said that the status of the corporation is not in any way affected by 21-13-30, that the separation between shareholders and corporations remains intact. I think the constitutional argument by appellant regarding the existence of the corporation is truly just
imprecise, decedent business. That's a very imprecise term for a very technical area. Was this the decedent's business or was it the corporation's business?
Well, in a supposedly held context, Your Honor, where the decedent owns 100% of the shares, certainly it was the decedent's business that would be the normal.
In the general conversation, but technically it was the corporation's business, was it not?
Well, of course, the corporate assets are owned by the corporation, and the shares that are owned by the decedent. But in other states, such as Pennsylvania and Georgia, that have similar statutes, the courts have interpreted the word business to include the business of the corporation, even though it didn't incorporate it. And indeed, both of those cases cited the Bogart Treatise, in which Bogart also included incorporated businesses under the term decedent. All of the statutes and the cases cited by the appellant, the contrary, actually deal with cases that are statutes that are written under the standard of the Uniform Probate Code. The Uniform Probate Code has a very different type of statute, which specifically is limited to unincorporated businesses. None of those statutes are limited to Ohio, and none of which are seen as authority here. And those statutes have that specific limitation. Well, Ohio simply does not have that limitation.
Have you made a claim here against the surety?
Not as yet, Your Honor.
Why?
Well, we're waiting for the surety to fall and the names of the parties early on in the case, Your Honor, and we're awaiting the determination of the liability. As the court knows, the probate court has never made any final determination of liability. We will have to be going back to the probate court for the judge to determine the amount of the loss and at which point it's going to be served.
You have placed the surety on notice.
Surety has been on notice.
Because there's a probably a provision in that policy, as there is in every one of them.
Your Honor, we know from the record there are some difficulties with the surety in the case, given that the bond was not obtained properly at the time that the public executor, but was only obtained after the matter had been filed for the court's attention. One would expect the surety to fall when that liability.
But that's for the trial court to determine. That isn't even part of our case.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Because I'm not sure how that bond was acquired. When I look at the convoluted facts, they went out through the back door, it seemed to me.
I don't confess that I was just surprised the bond was issued at the time it was, but nonetheless, that is an issue for the probate court to deal with down the road. This court merely needs to determine that the appellate court's ruling was correct, send us back to the probate court, for the probate court to make a determination as to the actual amount of the losses and be ultimately insured by the law.
Thank you, Mr. Lane. Mr. Gossick, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You may take 30 seconds if you'd like.
There was one out there, of course, that was
pretty good. Could you please move forward?
I'm sorry, Mr.
Chair. I can just think we wouldn't want to lose any part of it.
Okay, sir. I would point out to you that 21133 indicates that specifically provided to the chief of last assessment, this is continuing to begin to continue. I would submit to you that when it is deemed known to 100% of the stock of the corporation and at least 100% of the stock the beneficiary, that is an indication that the business ought to be continued. Not the boilerplate language, which is hopeful of us, but what else in the context of continuation of business can that mean other than the business will go on and terminate the business is not itself to the people who have inherited that stock.
So if you didn't do that in the will, you wouldn't be disposing of the asset of the stock. You have to say something about it. You've got to give it to somebody.
I agree, Your Honor, and I guess what I'm saying is that whenever you say anything about that corporation, about the disposal, you're saying it's a law. And this statute is constitutional. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.